From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, for the next 7 weeks, we will be sitting down with candidates for office who will appear on your ballot, a chance to get to know the candidates at length. And tomorrow, we will welcome Republican candidate for Monroe County Clerk, Peter Vazquez. Today, we welcome Democrat Jamie Romeo. On February 6, 2020, Romeo was appointed by the governor to fill the clerk's vacancy and serve the remainder of that term, and she was then elected to her first four-year term in November 2020. She won by, I think, 8 or 9 points, and she's running for re-election. We're glad to be able to sit down with Jamie Romeo, Monroe County Clerk. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Evan.
Am I remembering correctly? It was like an 8 or 9 point margin back in 2020?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, for the general.
JamieRomeo.com is the website if you want to learn more. Why do you want to do this again for 4 years?
I have worked in government for most of my professional career, most of the time behind the scenes. And Monroe County Clerk has been an honor of a position to have. And it's largely because the decisions we're making and the changes we're making, you can see immediately that impact that you have on the community, because you're in executive position, you're an administrative of state decisions, local decisions, federal decisions, but we're providing those services in real time, so you can see in real time the impacts of this, whether that's positive or negative. And there's so many more opportunities for creating positive impact that we want to do. We have lots of plans for. I'm very proud of the tenure I've had in the past 4 years of what we've done, and it's a great partner in government in a position to be in where we're able to say, this might be a great concept, but this is how we can execute it in a way to have the largest and the most impactful result in our community.
Well, I want to read a little bit from what you read on your website about how your work was affected 4 years ago in particular. You're right. Within weeks of, this is according to Jamie's website, within weeks of her initial appointment as county clerk, Jamie and her team faced the COVID-19 pandemic, shutdown, and eventual reopen that drastically shifted their perspective on the value of the services provided by the county clerk's office and a broader definition of accessibility. These lessons have largely defined the new vision and mission of the operations of the Monroe County Clerk's office. Tell me more about that.
So the county clerk's office for a very long time has usually been looked at as a revenue generator. We've returned $7 million to taxpayers. We don't use any of the property tax levy. We make money for county government. That's a great thing that we do from all of the fees that we incorporate from the services we provide. But there's a lot more to what we do than just generating revenue to help our county budget. And COVID was that example of where, especially that first few weeks with primarily the DMV, which to many people is an afterthought. It's an annoyance. It's a thing
well,
that
until
they
you
have
need
to
it.
Do. Right. Until you need it's not something you think about, and you never typically have a positive thought about it. But in those first few weeks, especially when we weren't sure what we were dealing with this virus, we were hearing from individuals and families of, my car insurance is about to get lapsed. I'm going to lose my driver's license. I need to surrender this plate. How do I do this? And it became very clear that very small, somewhat menial things and tasks that people needed to do, we needed to find a way to give them accessibility to get those done, because the impact of not having access to that service could be drastic, especially if you're a struggling family and you have one vehicle and all of a sudden you lose your car insurance and it results in the loss of a driver's license. That can have a huge financial impact on a family. And that's where we were one of the first counties in the state to find different ways of reopening. We had lots of drop boxes. We were processing thousands of pieces of mail, some from many other counties in different parts of the state. We even had transactions coming up from downstate that we were processing here because we're an agent of the state and sending back out. One of the other things that people might not realize was during those months in 2020, while the economy was shut down, people were still buying cars and people were still buying houses. And those were two big things that we continue to work with in a remote way. The real estate industry for our filing office, but for DMVs, the auto dealers that were still selling cars to make sure that those things were still happening. But it was one of those that you saw the what would happen if you didn't have access to this service. Surrendering a license plate, it's a dollar. It's not a big deal. Not having access to do that could have this huge ripple effect that then creates potentially a financial catastrophic event for a family. And that's one of those things of where we were able to help reinforce, not just with the public, but a lot with our team. We're public servants, and these things are vitally important to families across the county.
Yeah, I think that's that observation of how things can cascade is really interesting. I mean, I'm one of the more privileged human beings who's ever lived. I've said that many times. But, you know, I mean, in the last year, I got pulled over. I didn't put the new registration tag up, and so I got pulled over for that. And I was able to, I mean, this is all, like, traumatic, so it's all blocked in my brain. And it was in a different county than this one.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I had to plea and deal with a court.
Yep.
And for kind of a hot minute there, it's like, are they talking about, like, you could lose your license? I'm like, I literally don't think I've done anything wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot of stress that that did get worked out.
Mm-hmm.
But I could even see how quickly things can spin out of control if you miss a piece of mail, if you don't put a sticker up, if you don't plead in time. And that's in the court system. I recognize it's not all overlapping. But I just bring this up to say, I think it's interesting to observe that there can be a cascade of impacts on people when they don't know how to go about the process of dealing with the government. Make sense?
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And that actually led to kind of the second part of providing new ways to access, but then overcoming barriers. When you think about overcoming barriers, sometimes we think about a physical barrier, a financial barrier, different things. I don't know if it's a new phrase, but we kind of coined the term bureaucratic barriers, which is exactly that, especially when it comes to the world of DMV. There are so many rules and regulations that even someone like myself that's worked in the legislative spheres for a long time, it takes reading it a few times to maybe understand how we're supposed to get this right. And especially if you're talking to new Americans, refugees, struggling individuals, people who are currently unhoused, people in reentry services, and you're just going to kind of throw them into the wilderness of, oh, figure this out. Just go to the DMV, figure it out. Well, no wonder people have a negative experience with that. Those bureaucratic barriers can be huge, of which just creates that hopelessness, the giving up, I'm not even going to try, it's just too hard. And when you face that, trying to do something as basic as get an ID, that, again, it can create that ripple effect of all government is bad, no one's really here to help me, and it can be one of those first interactions with government that just helps keep somebody in a place that they shouldn't be, as opposed to us trying to lift them up.
Talking to Jamie Romeo, who is the Monroe County Clerk. She's running for re-election. JamieRomeo.com is her website. Republican Peter Vasquez will be on the program tomorrow. You mentioned some of your political experience, and I'm just reading down the list that you have on the resume here. Member of the New York State Assembly that represented, you represented District Number 136 in the legislature. You were the party chair, the MCDC chairwoman, chief of staff of the New York State Senate, longtime staffer in the Monroe County Legislature. So, as you said, some of it is sort of behind the scenes, but not all of it. But I am curious to know if you view the job of county clerk as a political one or a partisan one. Should people think, well, as a Republican, as a Democrat, this is what it means to be a county clerk. Here's why that matters. Does that extend in that direction?
County clerk is really a nonpartisan position in the way that you operate those offices. It really is. It is an elected office because it's in our state constitution. It's actually a constitutional officer. But the functions of the office itself truly are nonpartisan because you're not making policy decisions. You're implementing decisions that were made by other levels of government. And you do have some discretion in how you implement a service or how you create different avenues. But especially the way that we've carried out the functions of our office, you know, I will always say that, you know, I will always be adherent to my democratic values, capital D democratic values. But also, I'm a public servant first. And especially as a county clerk, that's a huge part of the services that we provide. And I think, To be quite frank, I think my role as that the record keeper in the front office for pistol permits is one of those areas of where somebody that might just look at my past tweets or things might have a perception of me of being, quote unquote, anti-gun, anti-Second Amendment, different things like that. That's not at all my position here. And, you know, I always say that I'm pro gun safety and gun responsibility. And I don't think it's a capital D necessarily value to incorporate those issues into pistol permits, which is one of the things that we've done. It's just we're putting out more information about gun safety and responsibility, accessibility to gun locks and things like that. So there's a way that you can, you know, in the way you're making some decisions that you can be just true to your values. But I think that's more of just a human issue versus a partisan issue.
Yeah, I mean, the stats show that if you have a gun at home, it is significantly more likely to be used to cause harm to someone that you care about than it is to prevent harm to you from an invasion. And I think what you're saying is, regardless of how you felt politically about who should have guns or not, the law is the law.
Correct.
The most that you would do that would be maybe viewed perhaps politically is just share that information about that where I'm not even, maybe that's political, maybe that's not.
And that's one of those, you know, it's all in the eye of the beholder.
Okay.
You know, some people will view, but it's the same with everything in life. Some people will view something and dictate your actions based off their own beliefs or not. My firm belief is that we don't run our office in a partisan way. We run our office in how do we make sure that the processes that we do are they're following statute, they're accessible, they're comprehensible, and that people know they're accessible, that we're able to get out in the community and make sure if somebody had this question, they know where to go.
So it sounds like what matters more is competence.
Absolutely.
This office.
This is not a job for beginners. The county clerk's office is a very complex job where you are overseeing several functions of federal and state government. They're not your functions or county government. You're the clerk of the courts for Supreme and County Courts. So you're managing criminal records and civil court records. You are somewhat administrative for pistol permits, but it's the licensing officers and law enforcement that are the ones that are actually moving and making decisions in that process. The DMV is a prime example. If I ran DMVs, I'd love to make some changes, but I know that I'm not. So you are administering that service on behalf of the state of New York, and you have to work within, you know, you have to play with the cards you're dealt. That doesn't mean you can't advocate, and we do a lot of advocating with my team in the county clerk's office, but it's knowing that you've got to do the best to help your community get through those processes as they're played out and as they're dictated in state, federal, local law. And that's the hugest responsibility is that having that vision, knowing that and understanding your role in that is to you're not making new policy. You're trying to make those connections with folks.
You say it's not a job for beginners, but did you feel like a beginner when you were appointed in 2020?
I did not feel like a beginner only because I had worked as a staff in county government for a very long time. That's where, you know, I kind of feel like I politically got raised or in a government sense, starting off as an undergrad intern and then moving eventually to overseeing the Democratic Minority Office for a long time. And I, with the work of my beloved legislator Haney and others, I learned a lot about all the functions of county government. That being said, I went into the clerk's office with a pretty firm understanding of I knew some of the functions, but then the more you get into it, there are some weird niches in state law that all of a sudden they just pin certain reporting and certain functions into it that are responsibilities of the county clerk. And I will say our statewide association, the New York State Association of County Clerks has been such a huge resource. It's a bipartisan organization of all of the county clerks. Some of them are elected, some are appointed, because in downstate, most of them are appointed. And we communicate regularly. We work out problems together. We're sharing information with one another. And again, it's all based off that we're all there to serve the public. We're not there for gotchas or anything like that. And it's a fantastic group that I'm actually honored that I was elected to be one of the third vice presidents of, because I've been very active with them. And again, it's because we're all there to service our communities and trying to help build those connections for folks.
For the last 21 years now, the Monroe County Clerk's Office has been a launch pad for county executive. And I know no one wants to get asked this question, but let's look at the list here. Maggie Brooks, 2003, 2007, 2011. Cheryl DeNolfo, Adam Bello, and you're the county clerk now. Now, I don't expect you to tell me that that's what you're planning to do, but I want to ask you first, why do you think this office has been a launch pad for county executive?
I mean, I think being a countywide office, being so intricate with county government itself, it can be seen as a launchpad because it's similar in that you're serving the entire community. You're serving all of county. You're not just serving the suburban parts, the rural parts of the city. You've got to have that comprehensive view of the whole county. So it does make some sense, I guess, if you were going to put my former chair hat on and just say that that would make an administering an $8 to $10 million operation of about 150 employees. That's nothing to say of what all county government is, but it might make more comparable than some other positions that you might be moving from. So I guess that could be one of the reasons.
Okay. Is that in your future?
I can't say anything that's in my future, because if you would have asked me 5 years ago, this current position would not have been in my future.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where I'm running for re-election. I was very proud to support County Executive Bello with his re-election last year. And I'm really looking at the next 4 years. I'm also just looking at getting my son through high school, which I know isn't that far
I can relate to that.
So it's one of those things have to come as they do. And one thing I've learned on my journey as a wallflower, quiet staffer that somehow turned into this much more vocal, present person is that you never know what doors are going to open. You can't be afraid to always walk through them, but it's one of those things that I can't say. I don't know.
Talking to Jamie Romeo, who is the Monroe County Clerk. She's running for re-election, jamieromeo.com. This is part of our series of conversations with the candidates for office. And I'm sure Jamie Romeo can tell you, when does early voting start?
Oh, no. It starts 10 days prior to Election Day. But if you would ask me for the date, it's going to be two Saturdays
10 days prior to Election Day.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So we're going to be all over that for you listeners, because I think too often we focus on the Election Day itself.
Mm-hmm. And
you got a lot of chances to vote, I hope.
You do, because especially this year, this is going to be the first year, I don't want to make sure I hit this mic, that it went through some litigation, but now New York State they're not calling it no-fault absentee, but you can vote by mail. Without having it be the absentee where you have to have an excuse. And this is that full.
So it's essentially no fault.
Yes.
Absentee.
It's basically no fault absentees, but they're calling it vote by mail. And you can go today online and vote and register to receive your ballot in the mail. And then once the absentee ballots start typically coming, which usually military ballots start going out in mid-September, you'll have the opportunity to vote by mail. It's important to know that this is different than in COVID, where you kind of had options. If you say you want to vote by mail, you got to vote by mail. You can't change your mind and say, I'm going to go vote in person. But you do have the opportunity today to register to get your ballot in the mail, and that no excuse needed, and that you can then get it. And I know a lot of people like that because they have it on their kitchen table, can give them a little extra time to research candidates. It's a little bit different than when you're in the booth and you might not necessarily know all the people on that ballot and you feel a little bit rushed on how to vote. So we know people can pull up their sample ballots online. We always encourage them to do that. But no-fault absentee is in effect this year. Went all the way up, I believe, to the Court of Appeals, and they ruled that they were not going to invalidate it.
And thank you, producer Megan Mack. General election early voting, October 26th to November 3.
Yes, thank you.
October 26th to November 3. Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays, noon to 8. And I am going to kind of put out the bat signal, listeners. I've been hearing about companies that are even designating time off or a day off or that kind of a thing for employees to vote, whether on the day or early. And I want to know if you work for a company that is acknowledging the need and the importance of voting and is doing anything different. So send us a note, connections@wxxi.org, connections@wxxi.org. I want to ask you about an experience when it comes to politics now as well that was, I was surprised to hear, was new for you. This was your first Democratic National Convention you went last week.
Yes.
And you were a delegate.
Yes.
So you were there for the full week, and a lot of buzz coming out of Chicago?
Absolutely.
What was it like in person?
It was unlike anything I've ever personally experienced, because it was just so many people. It was in some ways kind of like a rock concert, because it was so many people and such high energy. But it was also just, especially I was talking with a friend about that first night after President Biden made their remarks. And it was kind of the difference of, I know how it felt in the room. How did it come across the TV? And it was one of those, it felt like love. And that's one of those things of where there's just so much positive energy of love of country, support of one another, supporting President Biden, supporting Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. And it was, you can feel the positive energy of the delegates and the other individuals that were there reacting to the speakers, being with them. And it was always just, there was never mean-spirited or negative. It was always very uplifting. And to be in a filled arena with so many people kind of sharing that same feeling of, this could be the year The United States of America finally elects a woman to the highest office in the land. This could be the year that we could try to right in our ship as a nation and start, you know, putting all of the nonsense behind us and just get back to, let's have policy debates again. Let's talk about ideas again. Let's not be talking about electricity on boats and sharks and like crazy things. We don't want to do that anymore. We all love this country. We want to be able to move it forward and have those real conversations again.
As a woman in politics yourself, I want to ask you a little bit more about that, because you say, obviously, this would be the first time in this country ever elected a woman if they elect Kamala Harris.
Yes.
But this was a convention that was pretty different than 8 years ago. 8 years ago, there was a lot of talk about that. There were signs that say, I'm with her.
Mm-hmm.
Kamala Harris did not refer to gender in her 37 minutes. She didn't refer, she used the word woman one time, and that was to refer to her mother.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't talk about glass ceiling. She didn't talk about all of those things that were so prominent 8 years ago. And it was almost as if she didn't feel like she had to, that everyone knows that she'd be the first woman. She didn't have to talk about it.
Yes.
But 8 years ago, there was a lot more emphasis on that. Did it feel, I mean, I know you weren't there 8 years ago, but did it feel that way to you, that it was sort of this unspoken, but everyone acknowledged it? Or was there more talk in the hall about it?
I mean, Hillary Clinton's remarks really hit on that very strongly. I think there was a lot of people after 2016, and I'll admit that I was one of them, was for a moment had that feeling of it's not going to happen in my lifetime or not in many years, that we're just not going to be able to elect a woman. And I think Hillary Clinton's remarks were amazing in bringing to the struggle and the efforts that everybody's made in her presidential race, the women that came before her, like Shirley Chisholm and others. And just that this is that continued struggle to get there. But I think Kamala didn't necessarily need to point it out, because it was really brought up by others. I know some of the events that happened throughout the day, if you, not that you probably could see on TV, but if you looked throughout the crowd, everyone that had gone to the Women's Caucus that day were wearing white, kind of in a reflection of the suffragists and all the work that they had done to get us there. So it had definitely been a part of a conversation, but I think Kamala, very rightly so, is she's not running because she's a woman. She's running because she's a prosecutor. She's been vice president. She's been attorney general. She is ready and tested for this job, and she's proud of her service and loves this country and wants to lead it into the next 4 years. And I think that it was incredible for her to be able to focus on that, because, again, this isn't necessarily identity politics. We're not saying that we're voting for her just because she's a woman. But she's such a qualified woman, and we've had so many qualified women in these positions before. I think the foundation was laid for her before, that she didn't need to explicitly call that out.
Have you yourself experienced any gendered undermining, derision, doubt, et cetera, in the clerk's office?
In the clerk's office?
Yeah.
I think a woman in any leadership position experiences it in one way or another, whether it's with working with individuals that might not necessarily hear the words that you're saying because you present as a younger woman. They might not take your ideas seriously. There's the focus on you smiling more rather than the words that you're saying. I think, unfortunately, there's a lot of us. I mean, I know I'm constantly misgendered because I have a gender-neutral name. So it's Jamie, just for anyone looking on the website. I'll constantly get Mr. Jamie Romeo. And I think that's because there's that implicit bias that someone that's in an executive position's a man. I've had to, over the years, particularly for that small fact, not let myself get worked up about that. But I think that I would be shocked to find any woman that's in an executive position that hasn't been dismissed or treated differently being a woman in sometimes rooms where you're talking to, you're either the only woman in the room or just you're the most vocal woman in the room, I guess I'll say.
Do you handle those situations differently now than you used to?
I think now that I've gotten older, a big part that I want to make sure, because I've had different experience and been involved, is that when I'm working with younger women and trying to share stories and give tips and advice. But I know for myself, I I find that myself these days, I stand my ground more than I used to in the past. And I think that comes with a different level of competence and support. If you are the only person in the room and you don't have anyone backing you up, it can be very hard to keep your feet there and keep pushing. I have an amazing team in the county clerk's office, not just my administrative team, but also all of our staff. And I know that when I stand up and say we're going to do something, that they're behind me. And that is incredible. And I think especially when I know that I need to push and I might be in a male-dominated sphere, it's a lot easier to do that when you do have that team behind you.
Talking to Jamie Romeo, Monroe County Clerk, and I see the phone ringing. I've got a couple of emails we're going to read. When we come back from our only break of the hour, which we'll take now, we'll get some of your feedback, and we are going to talk about some of the other work that the Clerk's Office under Jamie Romeo's leadership has been engaged in over the last 4 years. We'll talk about that. Again, I want to stress here that Peter Vasquez, Republican, is going to be on this program tomorrow running for County Clerk, and our intention is to bring as many candidates as possible to you over these next 7 weeks, but really over these next 5 to 6 weeks before we get to early voting, because it's not just election day that you can vote. You got options as a voter. Let's take that break. We'll come right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, our annual preview of the Rochester Fringe Festival. The Fringe will be back very soon, and there will be dozens, hundreds of performances indoors, outdoors, in the air, on the ground, on stage, in cars, and more. And we will preview the Fringe next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me get a couple of listener questions. Gary emailed to say, Evan, as far as I'm concerned, a good county clerk is someone who oversees a smooth DMV, because no one ever wants to go to the DMV. It's like going to the dentist. All right, Gary. Well, and here's another one, by the way. Let me get Tom's comment on that. Tom said, recently went to the Irondequoit DMV, did not look forward to the experience, was so pleasantly surprised by the prompt and friendly service. Ms. Romeo must be doing something right. That's from Tom. So Tom and Gary talk about the DMV. Tom had a good experience. Gary says it's like going to the dentist. Nobody loves it. So as long as the DMV is good, he's fine with the county clerk no matter what else is going on. Maybe that's how a lot of people think about the county clerk situation.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's because the DMV is the most known thing. Everybody's got to talk to the DMV. Everybody's got to go through the DMV no matter what you're doing. But we did relocate two DMVs. Irondequoit is actually brand new. Our Henrietta one we relocated the year before. And one of the things we've done that hadn't been done in a long time, I know my predecessor, County Executive Bello, tried to reopen the downtown DMV, and he was shuttled by then the Republican executive and legislature, and then worked with the city of Rochester to open up the branch that's on East Main Street. But there hadn't been an investment in how we provide DMV services in a long time. And we've invested in re-outfitting two DMVs. The Grease branch has had a significant investment. And some of that's also when you invest in the infrastructure for those, you're investing in our staff. And that was a huge part, too, that we wanted to make sure we were doing, is giving them all of the tools to be able to help better serve the public. So I will say, anytime someone comes up to me and says, I have a DMV story, I always hold my breath because it can go one of two ways. But I want to hear both of those stories. But I will say, any of these positive stories, it's our staff. We have great branch managers, great assistant branch managers. We have a great crew in every single location that we have.
You did say earlier this hour, and DeMail, I'll get to your phone call in just a second. Hang there for a second. But on the subject of DMV, you said that, there's certainly part of you that would change more about the DMV, and that, mm-hmm. that as a clerk, you can do some advocating. Absolutely. I think a lot of people think, no, you can change whatever you want. You're in charge of the DMV, aren't you?
Yeah, nope. So all of the equipment is state-issued equipment. We are on a state network. It is all state rules and regulations from the forms that you receive to what languages are on the testing computers. That's an issue that in 3 years we've continued to stress to the New York State DMV, is that we need some more languages.
But you can't change it yourself?
No, because it's not county infrastructure. It's state-issued equipment and state-monitored equipment. So it's all of those things of, all I can do is continue to say, hey, we have large refugee communities. We need Dari and Ukrainian. on these computers so we're not having to do this ridiculous translation module that makes somebody feel less than when they're trying to get a permit. There's a lot of issues like that where all we can do is advocate, but because it's all state managed and run from the from their website to everything else, everything that happens in there is governed by New York State.
So what is your control? If the DMV is going well, should you get the credit? I mean, and if it's not going well, should you get the money? Like, what control do you have?
The control that we have are the physical environment and the staff and the training and the resources that those staff had to administer that service. And so that's a big thing where we've put into, we've improved two of our DMVs so that way they were much more open concept. There's, you're not feeling so consolidated. We got rid of the church pews. I know a lot of people liked the church pews, but we knew accessibility of getting out of those seats was hard, so we tried to get some better seating. But then also we built three new servers. There's all of this wonky tech stuff that I could get into, but the truth is that we had to work a lot on the infrastructure of things to make sure that we weren't getting downed systems and the training that you provide and the support that you provide to your staff. So then that way you might get to a counter where New York State rules prevent you from doing what you want to do, but are you walking away with the idea of what you need, what to do next? Do you have another recourse after that, or is someone just putting up their hands and saying, I can't help you, go figure it out? That's what's in our control.
Okay, and what else would you change if you could right now?
Oh, the point system. Absolutely. So if you want to get a state-issued ID, and this is not talking about Real ID, which is May 7th, 2025, for anyone boarding domestic flights, but I won't get into that. If you want to get an ID, you have to get 6 points that are defined by New York State regulations, which is largely defined by state law and the DMV commissioner. If you are experiencing homelessness, if you're currently incarcerated, if you're struggling and just don't have access to certain documents, there is very little to any way for you to get a state issue ID. So what's your recourse? I just don't have one. And up here, there is no, we do not do, New York City offers a New York City-based ID. That's a government-issued ID that allows you to then get into programs and services and things. And for the rest of the state, there isn't an equivalent to that. So we've done a lot of work on working with non-for-profits and service agencies with different constituencies about helping them navigate that process, because we've heard time and time again, not having access to ID is being a barrier to anything else. And there's a whole laundry list of places that we've gone to and worked with. And some of that is us reaching out and training caseworkers and other nonprofits on. There's a 4-page list of all these crazy things about how you get to points. So you need your birth certificate, but you don't get any points for that. It doesn't make much sense, and it can be very difficult to navigate. And we know people need assistance navigating that. There's also the lovely notion that if you're currently incarcerated, the jail has no form of documentation that they can issue that New York State DMV will accept that certifies your identity. But when you're released, there's a form that they can do. But the jail would know the identity of who's currently incarcerated. It's a lot of things that could get changed and updated. But again, it takes, I know lots, all of my partners in the state legislature have heard me talk about this. I know the state DMV commissioners heard us talk about this. There is a lot of work that could be done with refining this process to make sure it's still secured and you're still doing proper types of documentation and identification. But making it easier. So that way, particularly these vulnerable communities, if they're working with some other level of government, that government should be able to validate at some level the identity of those individuals.
Are you hopeful that any of these changes that you want to see made will be made?
I'm always, and this is a big part of, you know, what's the goal for the next 4 years that you want to do. I want to continue to expand this conversation. I think there's a lot of need for it. I'm very excited that our local senator, Jeremy Cooney, is now head of the Transportation Committee, because he knows, I talk with him a lot about how, you know, transportation's not just CHIPS funding. DMV also falls under it. I think that the more and more we talk as a region with service agencies and others here, and they start identifying the issue, because they do identify it, but it's that, how do we, what's the solution to it? For too long, we've just tried to look at loopholes of doing something else rather than fixing the problem. And I think that there is a path. We're going to continue to build that coalition so that way we can hopefully, because again, it's not just a Monroe County problem. This is honestly a state problem.
All right, let me get Demela on the phone. Hello, Demela, go ahead.
First, I want to say I love going to the dentist, because going to the dentist, they're always going to do something nice for you. If you're in pain, they're going to bring you out.
I love that.
You know, what I hate is going to the DMV. I always hated going to the DMV. I'd rather go to a dentist. I take a dentist all day long. I got rid of three vehicles in 2008. I always hated driving. I was a professional driver for my lieutenant when I was in the Army in Germany. I was stolen from her by the commander. The brain commander told me he was still here, meaning if I wasn't in love with a German girl back where I was stationed. That being said, I always hated driving. Then I hated going to the DMV. Wonderful. I hated the church pews. I always hated church.
I'm with you. Well, I'm with you at the church pews, at least.
And I hated the church pews. And the thing that always bothered me, there were no restrooms for what I consider to be the subjects. Not customers, the subjects, because they have to be there, okay? And I had to go to neighboring businesses to use a restroom because there was never a restroom for the subjects. And I know that the people who work there have a restroom. There's no doubt in my mind. Okay. The other thing that bothers me about the DMV, I see it as an exploitation of citizenry. Every 2 years, when you know who owned the vehicle, you have to re-register the vehicle. But a person can register a gun once for life. Okay. So every 2 years, and if I don't register that vehicle, okay, they would send me a letter in the mail precisely to where I'm located and knowing exactly where my vehicle is and saying that my license has been suspended because I failed to register it. Well, you know I've got it. You know exactly where it is. I haven't sold it. It hasn't been trashed out on a wreck. So you know exactly that I have it. So to me, it is a straight outright exploitation of citizenry. If you say you need the money, then say you need the money. Okay? But don't make me go and sit somewhere where you don't have a restroom, sit on church pews, and make me pay for something that you know I have.
All right, Demela, thank you for the phone call as always.
Well, and I will say that's actually a great example of there's actually been a lot of debate about the length of a registration for a vehicle, whether it should be longer or not. Same with inspections, the safety inspections. And those are all decisions that are made by the New York State that I always tell people you might be frustrated with a decision, but particularly when you're walking into a DMV, nobody that works in that DMV is making that decision. We're just there to help you get to what you need to do because the state has decided something. I will say, though, that all of our DMVs do have access to restrooms now. Maybe there was a previous location.
Okay, restrooms, yes.
Yes.
Church pews, no.
Well, yes, no church pews anymore. But so that is one of those, that's actually a great example of that. I know that we, you know, there's different states that have different 10 years on how long registrations and inspections will hold for, but those are ones that nobody within a DMV in Monroe County or actually any of our neighboring counties, we're not the ones making those decisions. We're just the ones that are trying to help you be compliant with them.
Otherwise, do you think Demela's concerns are understandable, valid?
Oh, no. I think they are understandable because It is one of those things where people do have, you know, it's one of those policy decisions that I think Albany needs to consider about when you're, you know, access to a car or a motor vehicle in our part of the state is vital for access to employment, food, medical care, everything. And whether or not 2 years is excessive or fees should be reduced, those are all things that I think should be taken into consideration because we know that a car is not necessarily just a privilege. A car, for particularly us in upstate New York, it's vital. You have to have access to that to get access to anything else.
Talking to Jamie Romeo, the Monroe County Clerk, who's running for re-election. And I'm reasonably certain that your opponent, who's here tomorrow, Peter Vasquez, is going to talk about this. So let me ask you about this story
Sure.
here. A 2022 incident. I'm going to read some reporting from WROC on this. Quote, around $32,000 in the form of 16 altered checks was stolen from the Monroe County Clerk's office. The county clerk, Jamie Romeo, announced in a press conference. Again, this is 2022. The Monroe County Sheriff's Office confirmed there was an ongoing investigation launched at the request of the clerk's office. According to Clerk Romeo, the office became aware of the missing funds in June of 2022 when they discovered 16 checks mailed to the clerk's office that had been stolen, altered, and cashed, end quote. So that's 2022. Mm-hmm. 2 months ago, the Republican clerk candidate, Peter Vasquez, urged the New York State Comptroller's Office to audit the current county clerk, that's Jamie Romeo, and the office of the county clerk over those 2022 thefts. Vasquez said, quote, it's a lack of transparency, a lack of decisive action, a lack of accountability, which allows for such problems to fester, ultimately shaking the very foundation of the public confidence and trust in the county clerk's office, end quote. So first of all, I want to give you some space to talk about this incident and then respond to some of those points there about, that your opponent has made.
Absolutely. So in 2022, we were found that, so I think first clarification, because unfortunately there's a lot of things that are being said that are just not true.
Okay.
No county dollars at any time were ever stolen. This was a theft of 16 other citizens in our county. There were 16 individuals that their mail en route to the clerk's office was stolen. Their personal checks were stolen, washed, and cashed at a higher amount than they wrote them for. By the time that press conference had happened, all of their funds with their different financial institutions had actually been restored. But it was still very concerning because they were all targeting clearly one place. They were all going to the county clerk's office. So we became aware of this. The county clerk's office processes thousands of transactions every week. Majority of them are electronic. A significant number of them are through the mail, where people are either sending in mortgage discharges, pistol permit amendments, a lot of other land recordings, sometimes court filings through the mail that we're processing. And so we became aware that these were missing. People were following up because their discharges weren't processed, and then we would find out. So by the time this press conference had happened, we had already communicated with these 16 individuals, made sure that their mortgage discharges were processed, that their financial institutions were contacted. We also, this is an ongoing criminal investigation. The last I spoke with the sheriff in the sheriff's office, this is still an ongoing investigation. It has not been closed. And I know there has been other examples of mail theft, whether it's been targeting blue boxes or other places that were that unfortunately we have seen some efforts where there are people that are targeting places that they know money is in the mail, stealing the mail and then stealing the money and the checks and washing them. But once this was learned, we did a review of our offices. We've implemented a lot of new internal safeguards that I'm not going to talk about on the radio because that wouldn't make sense. But it was an experience that it was very unfortunate. And I am proud of how we handled it, though, because when it became apparent, we had, and I believe it's still up on YouTube, that full 20-something minute press conference talking to everybody about it. It is not my position as county clerk to subvent the sheriff's office with their investigation to give an update, particularly if it's ongoing and it's an ongoing criminal investigation. I've been explicitly told not to do that. So it's one of those things of where what we tried to take from that was to encourage more and more people to do electronic transactions with us, particularly when it comes to mortgage discharges. Fortunately, with COVID, the vast majority of a lot of land recordings that we get come through our online systems, which means the money's ACH. There's no physical documents that are moving through the mail. There's no physical payments that are happening. It's just more secure that way. We have a lot of information technology and security within all of our different systems and all of our online partners. It's also faster because anything that gets in our queue is processed that day by 4:30, as opposed to mail. We have to manage it and try to get as much of it done. So it's one of those things that it was a learning experience. It was very unfortunate when it happened, but I think our office handled it very well. Of course, I would welcome any review of my office that would need to be happened, but currently we're still waiting for the results of that investigation, and we've continued to move forward.
Do we know who is responsible? I guess we don't yet.
No. No, we don't. I have never been told who's responsible. And to my belief, but again, I don't want to say for certain, I don't believe that any arrests were made.
Okay. And is there any indication that anyone responsible could have been an employee of the clerk's office?
That I can't comment on.
Okay. Are you concerned, as Vasquez has said, that this leads to a lack of public confidence and trust in the office?
I would have been concerned, except that when this happened, we had a very lengthy press conference with the sheriff's office and we discussed it at length. And we've always discussed it at length. We've never hidden it. There was never some grand expose that unveiled this to the community. We did it. We called the press conference and we made the remarks. So that's how we've always tried to conduct the business of the county clerk's office, whether it was this unfortunate incident or when we were trying to be ahead of the curve with all of the changes to the Carry Conceal Improvement Act. And we knew pistol permit owners were going through changes. Or right now, there's a new transfer on death deed, which is a new type of land recording that individuals can file to try to subvert probate court. We've been very assertive in getting out into the community and talking about what it is that we do. We've never hidden it.
Let me move on to another issue that involved a press release from the clerk's office. That's back in May. You were calling on the New York State Senate to pass a bill that would address, as you put it, the terrible legacy of racially restrictive covenants on the deeds of New York homeowners. I think when people hear about that, I want you to talk about this, because I think when people hear about restrictive covenants, and maybe I'm overgeneralizing, but I think a lot of people think that was terrible, that was on deeds in the past, it involved, you know, redlining, or there are certain municipalities locally that, you know, a black person cannot buy this house. It was right there on the deed. But I think a lot of people think, well, isn't that in the past? Like, what's going on here, and what is this about?
This law is about providing a way for our community, and not just Monroe County, but the entire state, to be able to acknowledge our past and to take some corrective action and, I think, some community healing from it. And currently, and we saw this from a neighborhood in Brighton who had been the only community that's actually been able to lift this racially restricted covenant off their properties, is it's a longer process because you have to go to court. You've got to get all the property owners on it. You might need to pay legal fees, filing fees. It can become a financial process and a long process to remove something that, yes, it's illegal, unenforceable, and racist, but it's still there, and it's still part of that property. It's still part of that history. It's still part of our history. And the law that I'm thankful, I think the vast majority, I think if not all of our state delegation signed on to it as co-sponsors, and I know our Democratic Assembly members passed in the Assembly prior to it hopefully getting to the floor of the Senate, this would create a process where homeowners would have a no-fee way of repudiating that language off of their property. But also, it would create a process that through the normal transfer of deeds, so through the buying and selling of homes, we would basically have the real estate industry that perpetuated it back then be responsible for, quote-unquote, cleaning it up. They would be the ones that when that deed was transferred, they would be responsible for looking for it, identifying it, and filing that repudiation of it. So then that way, at some set point in time, we would know where they were, and they would all be, they wouldn't be gone, but they would all be publicly repudiated. And I think that there's a lot more work we need to do with understanding the full extent of the impact, because quite honestly, we don't know the full impact that these had on our community. But I do think it's important, because it's one of those things where we need to acknowledge this wasn't something that happened in another part of the country, in another part of the state. It happened right here. And it had a significant impact on our communities and the way that they were founded and developed. And we can't go back in time, but we should be able to acknowledge it and repudiate it so that way going forward we can accept it. And it's one of those things of where we can't simply ignore it. I guess that's the foundation of it.
You had Irondequoit Supervisor Andre Evans, first black supervisor in Irondequoit, stand with you on this, with other supervisors as well. So why didn't it pass this year? What's going on?
I think it was just one of those, as some people would say, it's not necessarily seen as quote unquote a high priority. Personally, I think it's low hanging fruit. We're going to try really hard to get it elevated. Because one of the things I know from my days in Albany is that those last few days, there are lots of bills that get passed and lots of bills that get brought to the floor. So I think that we are hoping that because we've kind of elevated this conversation, going into next session, we can continue that and continue that push so that hopefully that we can see it get brought to the floor next year.
Patrick writes to say on checks, he said, "You'd be surprised how many people still write physical checks and hand them to me. It does come with a certain..." hold on a second. He said, "Even people I would consider youngish will give paper checks. I got a paper check from a defunct checking account due to fraudulent activity. I had to wait an extra 3 days to go get another paper check from this individual and then have my account." And basically, it was a long process to get the checks clear. He lost a week of pay. Mm-hmm. So he says, just a warning to the community, a lot of people still write paper checks. I wrote a paper check yesterday. So, you know, I mean, like,
I might carry paper checks with me. I admit it.
I know. It's still a thing. So, Patrick, I take that point. Thank you for that. And, Clerk, as we get ready to wrap here, anything that we missed here? I on my notes, I wanted to ask about the Real ID Law, which is still a year out, or maybe May next year?
May 7th, 2025.
What should people know about that?
If you want to get onto a domestic flight, you're going to have either a passport or a real ID, which is either the enhanced driver's license or the real ID. So if you look at your driver's license and you've got a flag or a star on it in the upper or lower corners, you're fine. If you don't, you don't have a passport, you're likely going to need to go down to the DMV or make that decision. Some people would rather carry a passport or get a passport card. Some people want to go down to the DMV and get that real ID. But if you want to be able to board a domestic flight May 7th, 2025, you're going to have to get that done.
Is there a flag on there?
No.
Why don't I have a flag on mine?
It says not for federal purposes up in that corner, right?
Well, why?
Because that means it's not a real ID. That's how you can tell.
It is. I just got this thing. Got it from one of your offices. Why didn't I?
Well, so that's one of the things of where that you can do a one-time upgrade. So, but you've got a little bit of time. So
people need to check.
But this year should be for real this time. They've kicked it for many, many years, but they keep telling us this is the time. So 2025, it's for real this time.
May 7th, 2020. Why are you laughing at me, everyone in there? Everyone behind the glass is laughing at me. No, honestly, I think this is a good example. I just literally had to renew my license. It did not automatically end up as a real ID.
Because you have to pay that little bit extra.
Because you got to pay that little bit extra. Okay. Jamie Romeo is the Monroe County Clerk running for re-election. JamieRomeo.com is the website. Her opponent, Peter Vasquez, will be on the program tomorrow. We appreciate your time. Thank you for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And we've got more connections coming up.